Imagine mapping out like 100 precise, scientifically vetted ways to save your region's climate, finding an absolute silver bullet, and then realizing you legally aren't allowed to pull the trigger.
Yeah, it is a wild scenario.
Welcome to your custom deep dive. Today, we're looking at a pretty comprehensive 2015 report on the Western Cape's climate change mitigation scenarios.
Specifically for the energy sector, yeah.
Right. And our mission today is to discover how a region realistically models and tackles rising greenhouse gas emissions when the bureaucratic odds are completely stacked against them. So, okay, let's unpack this. Looking at the models in this report, I have to ask a blunt question. Is avoiding an emissions increase even mathematically possible for them?
The short answer is no. Complete avoidance just wasn't on the table here.
Wait, really? So they just accept the increase?
Well, yeah. I mean, if the Western Cape just maintained their baseline trajectory, their energy emissions were projected to climb by about 2.3% every single year until 2040.
Oh, wow. That is steep.
Extremely steep. But the model shows that by implementing what they call all possible measures, along with a massive fuel switch from coal to natural gas, they can actually throttle that increase down.
To what?
To just 0.9% annually.
Okay, so since stopping emissions entirely is impossible, how exactly do they achieve that massive reduction? I mean, the report leans heavily on that coal to gas fuel switch to get a 34% drop relative to the baseline.
Yeah, exactly.
Why is that the primary lever?
So what's fascinating here is the underlying chemistry of that switch. It's not just about burning less fuel. It's about burning a structurally different molecule.
Right, because gas and coal are fundamentally different.
Exactly. Natural gas has a much lower carbon to hydrogen ratio than coal. So when you combust it, it burns way more efficiently. You get the baseload power the grid needs, but with a drastically reduced carbon penalty.
Here's where it gets really interesting. It's like going on a diet where you don't necessarily eat less. You just swap the daily donuts for a turkey sandwich.
Yeah.
The donuts are coal, obviously, and the sandwich is natural gas.
That is a great analogy. You still get the energy you need to function, but without the massive junk penalty.
Exactly.
But, you know, changing the fuel source at the power plant is just the supply side of the equation. Besides changing the fuel itself, we have to look at what physical actions give the absolute best return on investment.
Right.
So the report rigorously evaluated the demand side, too. They ran 100 physical mitigation measures through a multi-criteria analysis.
The MCA, right?
Yeah, the MCA. It's basically an index assessing capital cost, job creation, and emissions impact. And out of those 100 measures, there was one massive outlier.
Shifting freight transport from road to rail.
Yes. It scored an 86.55 on their index.
Which is, what, nearly 20 points higher than the runner-up?
Nearly 20 points higher, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because upgrading the Cape Town to Gauteng N1 rail corridor requires a relatively low capital investment over the study's time frame.
A huge returns.
Enormous emissions and social benefits. And the physics explain why. I mean, steel wheels on steel rails generate a fraction of the rolling resistance of rubber tires on asphalt. Plus, you're using a single massive locomotive engine to haul cargo instead of hundreds of individual truck engines.
So what does this all mean then? If rail is the ultimate silver bullet, why isn't the local government just pouring all their resources into that?
Well, the reason they don't just focus on rail comes down to pure jurisdiction. You've hit on the core bureaucratic hurdle of the whole study. It is the provincial influence paradox.
Okay, explain that.
So shifting freight to rail is the most effective measure, right? But the Western Cape province only has about a 17% influence over that action.
Wait, only 17%? Why so low?
Because national entities control the rail network. The province can advocate for it, sure, but they can't execute it alone.
Oh, man. So they are forced to model ideal scenarios while bound by jurisdictional reality.
Precisely. However, the province has 100% influence over other sectors, specifically things like agriculture and local buildings.
Right, the stuff they actually manage.
Yeah. They have the legislative authority to implement measures like solar water heaters in municipal housing, or to incentivize reduced tillage in farming, which drastically cuts tractor diesel use.
You know, it's like being a backseat driver. You know the optimal route to save time, taking the rail network, but you legally only have control over the AC and the radio, meaning the buildings and the farming.
Yes. Exactly.
So you just optimize the heck out of the AC and the radio.
That is a perfect way to conceptualize it, and I think it's a vital takeaway for you, the listener. Effective problem-solving isn't just about identifying the mathematically best solution on paper.
It rarely is.
Right. It is about focusing on the areas where you actually possess the power to enact change.
Which brings up a final detail from the executive summary that I really want to leave you with today. We've talked about this massive, complex, 100-measure study, the intense MCA modeling, the jurisdictional battles.
Yeah, a lot of moving parts.
But this entire report entirely excluded non-energy-related emissions. Why? Because the data simply wasn't available to them.
Which is wild to think about.
Right. I mean, think about that. If the energy sector alone requires this level of intense maneuvering just to slow the rate of growth, what unseen climate challenges are lurking entirely unmeasured in those non-energy sectors?